Good morning and welcome to Taking the Charge podcast, episode number 44 from Regensburg, Germany, where the sun is shining as it should on July 17th. I am David Hine of Hine News, and with me as always...
Hi, this is Oz Davis of BallinEurope.com, right here in Budapest, Hungary, where it reportedly is going to be a scorcher today.
Lots of work outside the podcast going on today.
Yes.
For both of us. So I think we're going to keep this nice, short, and sweet. We're going to talk a little bit about Lithuanian hoops today with our good friend, friend of both Oz and I, Simas Baranauskas, who everybody knows and loves on Twitter as Lithuania Basket, one of the leading sources of Lithuania basketball. So we talked to him about some of the ongoings in Lietuva. Then we're going to talk about Oz is going to say great movie. And I suppose, I'm going to say less great movie. But we'll talk about that after we talk about some hoops. So let's get into it. I just wanted to, first of all, thank the Houston Rockets, again. Wow. Two shows in a row where I thank the Houston Rockets. This is getting to be really weird, huh? Last week, obviously thanked them for taking, Dwight Howard off of my hands. I don't have to worry about him anymore. That Oz doesn't have to worry about him, meaning me as well. And now, that we are allowed to, we in Europe are allowed to keep watching Kostas Papanikolaou. The Rockets own his rights, and they have decided not to bring him in, or at least that's what the most of the reports are right now, that they're not going to bring him over this summer. I guess they would have to buy him out, and so they're thinking about maybe waiting until next year, I guess, when he would be a free agent, is how I read it. So thank you, Houston Rockets. Now the only question is if he's going to stay a Red or not.
Well, yes, thanks. Thanks, Olympiakos, in advance for getting this guy back. Of course, this is going to be one of the driving plot lines of the EuroLeague season, you know, the prospect of a three-peat by Olympiakos. But you wonder how much the individual players are conscious of this. You wonder if that's something they really have in the back of their mind. And to me, it really doesn't matter if they do or not. I just hope that Olympiakos, now that Kyle Hines has left, I hope that they re-sign as many key players as they possibly can and go for it.
Yeah, it would definitely be a fascinating storyline if they can at least get close to a three-peat. You know, if they're making it to the quarterfinals and then they're close to the Final Four, and as long as they bring back enough pieces, I think they could definitely compete. You know, obviously Kyle Hines, replacing him is going to be a tough one, but they found him, or sort of Bamberg found him, and they passed the baton along. So. There's other guys out there that can probably fit into their mold a little bit. But definitely, I guess there's some rumors that maybe Barcelona's after Papanikolaou, but I just don't see that. Especially with Spanoulis coming back. So
you know what they say: the off season when every EuroLeague team wants everybody.
Yeah.
And so I saw this tweeted the other day, and truer words were never spoken. Speaking of re-signings, I wanted to give a shout out to Lokomotiv Kuban, who re-signed Richard Hendricks. Hendricks, who we've enjoyed watch for a few years now after a couple of fantastic seasons with Maccabi Tel Aviv, really didn't find his place on Milano last year where he started the season. And then came to Kuban and really was a complete catalyst down the stretch. For Kuban as they took the Euro Cup trophy and advanced the EuroLeague. I'm glad to see Hendricks back in form, and it's a swell move by Kuban in this return to the EuroLeague. Good for them. Good for Mr. Hendricks.
Yeah, I hope that Kuban is able to put together a pretty strong team. And you know, Hendrick is a nice piece for them for sure.
Yeah, I mean, this is I think this is going to be one of the under the radar signings that could play out very well. I mean, especially if Kuban can really hold it together and make that top 16 round. Like I say, I mean, this was a key EuroLeague player with Maccabi, and I'm not exactly sure what the problem was at Milano, but he proved in the second half of last season that yes, this is still a viable piece on the EuroLeague team. So, and I'm just glad he stuck with this EuroLeague team, where we know that he will be a starter, and we know that he will be a key contributor to this team with
Yeah,
which he won a title.
and I'm happy
So.
that Kuban is gonna, you know, that is putting together this team because, you know, last year they had a solid team, but then obviously got bounced in the qualifying. So, and that, you know, sort of, you know, I guess probably took a little bit of their punch out from last year. I mean, it did end up winning the Euro Cup, but still to go in and to bring him in back. So. Good job for them. Good job for them. Not a lot of big news going on in the EuroLeague right now. Still kind of quiet. But the summer is, as always, filled with European basketball, with international basketball tournaments, youth tournaments. Obviously, last week we were just finishing off the U19 Worlds. The U20 European Championship group stage ends today, Wednesday the 17th. And leading the undefeated Greek team, or one of the leaders, one of the two main leaders for the undefeated Greek team is our man of international mystery, Giannis A. I wonder how many actually, if you go around the internet, how many spellings there are of his last name.
I believe that there are at least eight, three of which are employed by FIBA themselves.
Yeah.
It's funny because it's hard to find even stuff on him on FIBA, because you have to do searches for all the different names. Good for Giannis. We talked about this before the show, and impressive stats he's proving to be this guy in the middle that they want to see in the NBA with Milwaukee. But we discussed this before the show that he is suffering a few more turnovers, let's say, than the Bucks might like. But I think this is a part of being leaned on in the paint a lot for Greece in this tournament. At least I would guess. I'm trying to be optimistic on the part of Bucks fans that this is an aberration. This is an anomaly. I don't think that he'll be handling the ball quite as much as rookie season over there in North America, but yeah, good for Giannis.
Yeah, I haven't had a time to watch these games, unfortunately. They are actually on demand on live basketball TV. Go get it. So it's great, and they're showing loads and loads of this international basketball. But it's definitely something that I do want to watch once things cool down a little bit here at High News headquarters, just to see how he plays, because I've never seen him, and really would be anxious to see how he is playing. I mean, the last two games he's put up double doubles, 12 and 15, against Croatia, and then the penultimate game of the group stage against Montenegro had 12 and 12, 7 assists. Did like Oz was talking about, had 7 turnovers. But you know, playing for 34 minutes is a lot of time. So, you know. It's if you're a Milwaukee Bucks fan, I would say go check it out because, you know, this is going to be one of the could very well be one of the stars in the future of your club. So, definitely looking forward to checking those out, and I think everybody should. So.
And one thing they'll really want to check out with this guy is one of the outstanding stats for him in this tournament so far has been his 3-point shooting. He's at 45.5%, and if they can get this out of this guy as well over there, well, okay, great. They're happy. They're happy with their draft pick.
Well, I think it's the versatility too. I mean, you look at the
Yeah.
rebounding as well. You know, he's the last two games, 15 and 12 rebounds. You know, had you know, sevens and fives in there. You know, that's you know, definitely proving that he can, you know, do a lot of different things. And so,
Could actually live up to the hype.
There's a lot of, yeah, could be. I'm not saying he's not. But I, that's one of the things I'm definitely, I'm thankful for live basketball TV, because it gives me a chance to see these guys, which I wouldn't have been able to see. So, go check it out. Go check it out. How's the NBA
Okay.
now?
Yeah, okay. Here's a segue for you. Not available on live basketball TV are NBA games, of course. I wanted to talk a little bit about I wanted to I'm going to try and avoid the rant, okay? But I did want to talk a little bit about one of Ballinger's favorite players, Andrei Kirilenko, who signed with the Nets, what, officially 1 2 days ago. This agreement was in the making for about a week or so. Signed with the Nets for an exception, I believe. So he's making, by some reports, $7 million less than he might have made with Minnesota. Now, of course, we know that the Nets are owned by Mikhail Prokhorov. Dave, I'd just like you to say what's on your mind at this point.
What I want, what's on my mind right now? Well, I mean,
Yes, about this signing.
he may not have gotten the money, but I'm sure he got some kickback somewhere else.
Okay, here we go. Now, this is about, well,
I
I would
assume
say,
that's what you wanted.
yes, I would say about half the headlines having to do with Kirilenko's signings involve NBA executives are grousing about the possibility of there being kickbacks. Of course, the other half are running this story with, headlines like the Christian Post ran, which is, Brooklyn Nets sign Andrei Kirilenko, his pop star wife allows him to cheat once a year. The media is really running with this aspect of the story, but in any event, I'll try and stay on point. Okay, let's say, and I think that most of the reports of this discontentment are coming from Yahoo Sports. Our man with the unpronounceable name, Adrian Wojnarowski, apparently contacted more than one NBA executive who were quite upset about this deal, figuring there were kickbacks. A small group of owners has reportedly called for an investigation into this. But seriously, is it just because they're Russians? I mean, honestly, okay, maybe I live in an alternate universe, okay, but
Didn't that Iron Curtain go down a long time ago?
I mean, well, I'm wondering. I mean, here I am, and I'm looking at, okay, like what if they had signed, what if the Nets had signed Chris Kaman for this exception? What if, damn, who are they flirting with? Kyle Korver. Korver. What if Korver had taken this deal for slightly less money than he got with the Hawks? What about that? And finally, what about this? Okay, here's the team. Now, okay, you've got Deron Williams, you've got Brook Lopez, Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett. Let's see, who else? Coming off the bench, you've got Andre Blatch, Jason Terry, Sean Livingston, Reggie Evans, and Mirza Teletovic, in addition to Kirilenko. Now, this is a pretty good team. This might even be a championship contender. Why do we believe automatically that another player will take less money to contend for a championship? And we don't believe it in this case. Remember, too, that this is a guy who chose at a free agency to sign with CSKA Moscow a couple of years ago, and he might have made less money, in this deal, too. But yet, he chose to play there for other reasons. Yeah, now, why is it assumed that there's the kickback here? I mean, maybe there is. Who knows? I mean, we're living here in, Central Eastern Europe. I mean, we know that this sort of, let's say it, corruption happens. But why are we automatically jumping to this conclusion about this deal?
I don't know. It's what we grew up with, and we haven't changed yet. I don't.
It's the cynicism of
You're looking for
the
this. You're looking for
post-Reagan
some deep.
world.
You're looking for some deep answer, aren't you, Oz?
No, I just that's just my rant. That's just my rant. I think that here's Kirilenko. With this lineup in place, if the Nets give all these quality minutes to Pierce and Garnett and Lopez and whatnot, if they manage to run with this starting line for the rest of the year, Kirilenko is in a position to be sixth man of the year. I'm penciling him in for this award, if the former Celtics hold out. If they manage to keep their bodies in place with scotch tape this season. Yeah, I'm penciling in Andre for sixth man of the year. Why would you not come to this team? No, okay, he had a decent situation in Minnesota. Yeah, sure. But like I say, Brooklyn is, on paper, this is one of the, what, five or six best teams in the league right now.
Without a doubt. And I mean, this is a team that is slowly, I think, starting to worry a lot of teams, like Miami, they're going to start worrying. I mean, even I mean everybody, I mean, you look at the group that they're starting to put together. I you don't want to
Top
call
to
you don't
bottom.
want you don't want to call them the favorites, but you have to slowly start thinking, maybe they might be. Maybe they might be, I mean, is Brooklyn, that's isn't Jason Kidd the coach though?
Yes, you've hit upon the
He's no, but he's the coach there, right? That's he
yes,
that's where he
you've
moved
hit
to, right?
upon the chink in the armor, I
That
think.
that's a big question, I mean, okay, we
Yes.
have there's always this sort of idea, what happens, what is Spoelstra, how much did he, how much of an impact, and all this other stuff, but if you have a LeBron, that he clears up a lot of mistakes or errors, whatever, what have you. This is a first time coach, and he was a great player, but I think there's a there I think there is a little bit of question mark there. But
I'm skeptical. I'm
Pokerov,
skeptical. I'm skeptical about Kidd as coach.
yeah, you have to, I think you have to be.
I'm thinking that Pierce Garnett is a nice crutch for any lack of coaching experience. I think they're going to be doing a lot of on-court coaching for this team when they're both on the floor. I can definitely see that happening. No, I am not 100% confident in Kidd as coach, especially the way that we've seen, his now nemesis, Spoelstra, just really come into his own this last couple 3 years. No, Kidd as coach, I think here's the Achilles heel potentially for these Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah. One guy not joining the Nets this year.
Go ahead, go for it.
Well, actually, what we said last week was that that Fenerbahce would be signing people within the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks or so. They didn't sign anybody yet. And I want to believe I saw somewhere that Obradovic was sort of saying, with these Turkish regulations as far as number of players, I don't know exactly what the number is, that more or less, to the sense, I don't want to quote him because otherwise we're get in trouble, all this other stuff, but in essence, it's kind of making it a little more challenging because you have to have a certain number of Turkish players, and obviously you need a certain level of the Turkish players to play. But one of the rumors out there, and Oz was a believer that
Yeah,
Boyan
I was on board.
Was that the Nets were going to bring in Boyan Bogdanovic, and yeah, I said Oz, it's not going to happen. So, and it didn't happen. So,
Yeah. Ein wins this round.
I didn't want to take the, I didn't want to take the credit. You wanted me to take it, so I'll go ahead and take it because
I'm
there's so many
disappointed.
ones out there that I don't. So.
I'm disappointed. I'm wonder. Well, I'm happy that we're going to see, Bogdan in the EuroLeague, but I'm wondering what the thinking was on this. I'm wondering why they didn't take the buyout. I'm wondering if Coach had something to do with this. I'm wondering how. I mean,
Maybe he
are
just,
they
maybe he
doing?
just, after talking to coach, maybe he just didn't believe that he's gonna be playing.
Yeah,
That was,
yeah.
wasn't that the thing that even everybody now is saying to Teletovic? It was like, listen, man, you could have been a star here last year. You could have maybe playing Final Four somewhere. You're sitting on the bench in Brooklyn. Pick your, choose it. What do you want to do? I mean, so that's, I think that's what I would, that's where I would be thinking that. What was the main reason why he decided that way?
He can only help Fenerbahce, that's for sure. I mean that can only improve their chances. So he was one of he was still one of the few bright spots on that team, pretty much consistent in all season last year. I did want to do
The
I did want to
crosstown, whatever rivals of the
yeah
Brooklyn.
yeah I did want to do one more NBA note. This morning it came out that this morning as we record this, it came out that Bobby Brown, Downtown Bobby Brown, let's call him, got a workout with the Knicks. This was really good news, because a couple of weeks ago, Mark Stein, I believe it was, over there at ESPN, had reported that, three teams had shown interest in Bobby Brown, including the Clippers, who had previously played for. But this, as far as we know, is his first workout with the club. So good for Bobby Brown. I understand that the Knicks are looking for a third point guard to go behind Raymond Felton and our guy Pablo Prigioni. So Bobby, he'll have to be signing for some sort of minimum, but good for him. I got fingers crossed, even though again we'll be denied Bobby in the early. For himself, I'm sure he would be pleased to be suiting up for New York next
All right,
season,
here's a question to
and be playing with my guy Meta World Peace.
are you here's a question to you though. Do you really think that he'll land there with New York? New York?
I mean, basically, it's a question of how they're going to fill this 12th spot. I mean, literally. I don't know. I don't know how the workout went. I've been looking through the New York media
All
this
right, okay,
morning.
maybe we'll say it this way. Do you think that that'll work?
I think that Bobby, I think his goal is always to play in America. So I think that, I don't know, it's a hard call for him personally, because look, he won't be playing many minutes on the Knicks unless.
It won't be I'm Bobby Brown. I got the ball, and just you guys, the shooters, just hang out on the side and wait for me to pass to you. Just make sure you're open, like it was in Siena. I don't think Carmelo Anthony's gonna be happy with that.
No, but you're assuming then that he can't readapt to the game. Now, he played parts of what, 3 seasons over there in the NBA with 4 different teams. So I'm sure that he's aware of the differences in these style of games. The only thing that would bother me is that, again, he's not going to be getting many minutes. I mean, here's a guy who was going 30 minutes a game both in Italy and EuroLeague last year. So I mean, that would be the personal dilemma, if you will, that Bobby's going to have to get over. On the other hand, I wouldn't be surprised to see a thing where he comes to Europe for the first half of the season and ends up in the NBA in January. Certainly wouldn't be surprised to see that either.
I wish him the best. I hope he makes it for him.
Absolutely.
I mean, anybody, I always wish that they absolutely are able to fulfill their dreams. And I think that if he can adapt his game to fit it, okay, great. Go out there and make it to the league. So I just see that as a real tough fit there. But maybe he's able to. To work it better. So yeah, I guess that's about it for the news. Nice and tight today. Nice and tight and short. Let's move to our interview of the week. We talked to, like I said, Seamus Baron, sorry, Seamus Baranauskas.
Baranauskas.
Baranauskas. Talked to him about some various issues going on in Lithuania. So here's our talk with Simonas. Okay, welcome to the show this week, Simas Baranauskas. Simas is everyone knows and loves him, of course, at Lithuania Basket on Twitter. Simas, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Simas, why don't we? I know you're a little tight for time. Why don't we kind of delve right into it? We're talking some Lithuania basketball today with you, and kind of wanted to get your opinion about a couple of things going on in Lithuania. Obviously, basketball mad nation. The FIBA came out earlier this week with a sort of an update, kind of like an, I guess an injury update regarding their national team for EuroBasket 2013 in Slovenia, saying that Simas Jasaitis and Paulius Jankunas probably won't be able to make it back to the squad. They're in a pretty tough group there in Slovenia with Latvia, as well as Serbia, Bosnia, former, we'll just say Fyrom, Macedonia, and then Montenegro. Maybe big group.
Yeah. Not just tough group, big group.
Maybe just give us your opinion about what you think, what you expect from this team, and also maybe what the Lithuanian public, in your opinion, thinks about this team going into Slovenia, knowing that some of the big names, some of the older veterans, also aren't going to be around this time.
Yeah, I think the best way to describe it would be cautious optimism. And it's not probably not because of our own roster, which is okay, but more about the other teams not having their best players, as you said. And I mean, despite the retire, apart from the retired players, we have a really deep roster. I think we can go far. But as I said, like if the best teams had their players, we probably wouldn't have a chance at medals. Right now, I think it's wide open, and I think Lithuania is one of the teams under Spain, France, maybe Greece that can jump in there, have a good result. And I mean, especially with the deep roster, we have 11 solid players. That's the 12th one. That's probably not going to get much playing time. But even in a tough group like this, I think we can achieve a lot. Because we play in a tough group in the first round, obviously it makes it a bit easier in the second one, given that the two groups will combine and form a new one. And generally, like in Lithuania, everyone expects medals like every championship. It's not a surprise, and it's been this way ever since 1992. Well, probably not 1992, but like we're probably a bit more afraid than not knowing how things are. But like every year, the teams got some goal to reach the medal round, make the semis, and that's what we're aiming at.
And I believe it's top six places. Yeah, top six places, excluding Spain. So would be, I guess, the seventh place team if Spain is in there. Would make it to the 2014 World Cup. So I imagine that's the absolute minimum goal, right, of getting to the World Cup next year?
Yeah, obviously that's very important to make the World Cup. Anything, like whenever we lose in the quarterfinals, it's considered a disappointment back here in Lithuania. And although, like, rating realistically, we might end up falling somewhere in that slot, be like from third to sixth, looking at the strength of teams. But I think the quarterfinals would be a bit of a disappointment, but making the World Cup is really important just to keep it rolling every summer with some proper tournament action, which I think is very important for our young roster to form as a group. And I think with this roster, we'll have a really solid team for the next decade, with Valančiūnas and Motiejūnas as the big Franco duo. You have Kuzminskas coming in as a nice young prospect. And obviously, Potsis, Gecevičius, Seibutis, Mačiulis, Kalnietis. It's a really young roster, which I think will form into a really nice group. And I've seen down the road, like 4 or 5 years, which will be one of the best in the world.
I do want to ask you about actually one of the guys I didn't quite hear in there, it's actually a guy who I haven't thought very highly of, but also haven't really made it public, let's say, on this cast much in the past, and that's Mantas Kalnietis, sort of the point guard with Lokomotiv. We were talking a couple of days ago, sort of that, you know, he did have a good season this year there in Russia, but we were kind of debating whether or not that was also because Nikolaitis was there as well. Like I said, I'm not the biggest fans of him, of Kalnietis. And seeing that he, and maybe you can correct me, but looks like he's going to be their main point guard. Do you have faith that Mantas can, let's say, lead you guys to the promised land? I mean, is he good enough to lead this team with, you know, a team that still has high expectations?
Well, he's going to be the main point guard. That there's no question about it. But as you said, like the concerns about his skills, about his ability to lead the team, are in doubt. They always have been in doubt. And I think the only really good championship he had was in 2010 when Lithuania went on to win bronze in the World Championship in Turkey. I mean, he did it then, so it's quite reasonable to think that he could actually go on to repeat it, especially after probably the season of his career so far, playing abroad for the first time ever in his career. I think it was a bold move to move out of Žalgiris, but I think it benefited him, and he improved his game massively as a point guard, especially. I think playing alongside Nick Kalaitis benefited both of the players, and not only in terms of on being on the court, but them learning from each other. They're rather different in their approach and their style. But I think we could have some problems in the Lithuanian national team because we don't have that other guard that could take some pressure off Kalnietis. We do have Tomas Delininkaitis, I guess, and Adas Juškevičius as the so-called backup point guards, not point guards.
Who was the second? Who was the second one? You had
Delininkaitis and Adas Juškevičius from Žalgiris.
Okay,
yeah, and actually we've brought Vytenis Čižauskas, the starting point guard of the under-20s, the Valančiūnas generation, as the 15th man just yesterday as well.
Okay, didn't see that.
And he played in the student team, so he Coach Kozlowskis trusted him and brought him to the main camp.
Now, you mentioned him. Is he or is Adas? Or, I mean, there's also Augustas. You're going to have to help me with Pisio, the one who was in Estonia.
He's not playing.
I know he's not. But
Juškevičius.
Yeah, is he another one that might eventually? I mean, he's only 22, and he was able to really perform pretty well this year in the Estonian and also in the Baltic League. Is he another guy that might down the road become a senior team point guard option?
Well,
where do you see the point guard options in the future?
Talking about him, I don't really think he's going to develop international team material with the only possible exception of Lithuania not producing another guard through the next 5-6 years, in which case it'd be an option for the senior team, but not a very good one at that. I think Čižauskas has a much better chance of developing into a national team player. And even now, playing for the national for the student team, he was like one of the players that could actually take the game on his back, take the team on his back from time to time, and he's proved he's a solid point guard to playing with Valančiūnas. He spent the last season with Valladolid in Spain, ACB top league. So even though he didn't have a big role on that team, not much playing time, he didn't have a chance to go up against really good players in Spain. So I think that will benefit him in the future. And I think that's my presumption, that he should join Žalgiris this year. But it's not guaranteed because his contract expired after this season. So there might be some negotiations going on. Talking about possible point guards for the future, the one name that really stands out for me is Marius Grigonis, the 19-year-old from Kaunas.
Yeah, he was at the U19 Worlds.
Yeah, he was there. He was the best player on the team, and he really impressed. He was probably the most impressive player on the 19-year-old team, together with Tomas Dimša, I guess. Both of them are probably going to be national team players down the road.
Yeah, but do you see him as a point guard, though? And that was one of the things that a lot of people where were we? In Prague. That we didn't really see him much as a point guard, though.
Yeah, I guess so. But that team had a couple of decent guards in Lakavičius and Gintvainis. So I guess that team didn't really need him as a point guard and made use of him off the ball more. But I think he's one of the players that has the skill to beat someone one-on-one off the dribble, create shot opportunities both for himself and for his teammates.
Well, he definitely can create for himself, that's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, he's a really skilled player. I think he has the potential to develop into a really good point guard, like maybe even point forward type of player, like Šiškauskas, for example, was in his days. So I think he's the player that stands out to me as a player that can really make an impact down the road.
Simas, I wanted to ask you about this. Late last week, the Lithuanian Federation had to announce that Paulius Jankūnas will not be playing in this tournament. Not a huge surprise. He was undergoing, you know, therapy to recover from injuries. But I wanted to ask you, does this have any effect on this team? And if so, what?
I think it will have an effect, but not as big as if we had lost another guard or something like that. Because this team will really have a strong front court with the Lavrinovic brothers, Motiejūnas, Javtokas, Valančiūnas. Kleiza will probably play as a four. So the main loss is probably going to be the toughness and the rebounding that Jankūnas brings together with his ability to stretch the floor. Obviously, we have other players that can stretch the floor just as well. But that combination of being tough, able to defend physical power forwards and crash the boards as well, that will be missed heavily by the national team. But as I said, like, Coach Kozlowski shouldn't be like really surprised about it, because we knew that it was unlikely for him to make it right from the beginning. Like, he expressed his wish to like return next year whenever he's healthy. He's always open to the national team. He's one of the guys really fighting on the court, giving his all, and he will be missed. I think he would have made the roster, but I guess this means that Motiejūnas is finally in, which is a good sign.
Regarding Motiejūnas, Donatas Motiejūnas, he does finally come into the team. You know, in the past he's been not invited, and then he was also requested not to go to camp to work on maybe getting to the NBA. He's never played. You know, he's 22, maybe going on 23. Not exactly sure where he's at with his birthday. He's never actually played with Valančiūnas. They've always been just 1 year. Well, not always, but you know, they've been close a couple of years, but just 1 year apart. You know, these are the two big names, you know, in the post for them in the future. How do you see them working together on the court? Do you see that something that it's going to work, or do you think that it's something that Kozlauskas is going to have to say, okay, you know, we're not going to be able to really mix them in a lot? Do you see that? What do you see this front court duo?
Well, I think there were many discussions during the draft process 2 years ago that they are really different players and can actually benefit one another really well. Is Motiejūnas obviously playing further out from the basket, Valančiūnas dominating in the paint. I think down the road, in the long-term perspective, they're going to be a really great duo. But I have doubts in Kozlauskas putting all his trust in those two youngsters this year in EuroBasket in Slovenia. I think we're going to see much of one of them being on the court. So together with a more experienced player like Kleiza, like Yaftalkas, like the Lovrinovic twins, I think it's going to be mixing and matching as opposed to having them as the core unit as of now. So it's going to be different, I think, 3-4 years from now. They're probably going to be the starting big men. But right now, I see them serving not as big a role as we'd like to them to be.
We'd like, meaning that the Lithuanian general public would like to see these two guys lined up against with each other on the court. Then, I mean, that's your feeling about what the people sort of are hoping for.
Yeah, I think it's what people would like to see, because it's really exciting to see the young guys on the court there, as it always is to see the prospects coming up to the national team, and I think their games are really exciting for the player, for the fans as well. It's just like that sometimes you have to go with consistency over fashion points,
sure.
flamboyancy and excitement. I think like they still need to gain some experience, especially in big tournaments like that, where the pressure is as high as it can be.
Well, especially Motiejunas. I mean, you think about Valanciunas. He's already been at two big tournaments.
Two, yeah.
You know, one of them at the home, and the other one the Olympics. You know, you don't get you know, much higher stakes than that, and also won a U19 World Championship with him as the dominating MVP. So, I think it's more Motiejunas probably getting the big experience than the other way around, right?
Yeah. Obviously, like, I think it was the right time for Motiejunas to make. Well, we're talking as if he's made it already, but like, I think it's a given. But let's not be 100% sure, just in case. I think he really needs to make the team this year, because otherwise, like, you get cut in 2010, you get cut in 2011, being the last man in 2011 to be cut, then you don't come for club reasons, NBA reasons. It just puts a big question mark about his availability in the future if he doesn't get a spot this year.
Do you foresee so, that? Is there? But there, do you see a chance that Kazauskas doesn't take him though?
I hope not. I don't want to see a chance. but like, just theoretically speaking, maybe. But I really doubt he gets cut. Yeah, especially because he does bring a lot to the table.
Yeah.
And he's a good player. I really like him.
Well, moving away from FIBA ball a little bit for a second here, you mentioned him earlier, Linus Kleiza. And as I understand it, yesterday he was amnesty by the Toronto Raptors. I was wondering if you had any thoughts on that. And I was also wondering if there has been any reaction in Lithuanian media on this story. Does he have a future in the NBA, and if so, what?
The main reaction was that he's going to get paid by the Raptors and then earn some more, probably playing in Europe, which is probably not the worst situation to be in, especially because if you get amnesty, he was never going to have a chance with the Raptors, with them signing Gay last year, bringing in Novak in the Barniani trade. So, and they have a bunch of young players as well at the wings. So, I mean, he was never going to get a shot with the Raptors. And the amnesty just means a fresh start. Either it's in the NBA, which I doubt, or coming back to Europe. I've heard Turkey, Spain, Russia, Greece as rumored destinations. And, you know, like, the money is big there for him. So, I mean, for him, it's only a positive move that he got amnesty. I think it would have even been better for him if it had happened earlier in the year, because he hasn't been playing this year. I think he's only played 20 games this year. And I was writing the EuroBasket media guide, and I counted, I think it was 102 games in three seasons. So he's had his injury troubles, which have prevented him from playing for the Raptors. And yeah, I mean, it's only a good move for him.
Okay, I don't know what that noise was, but
I think it's the cleaning ladies.
The cleaning ladies.
Yeah.
Seamus is at the U19 World Championships women, working there with the media. So now that the cleaning ladies are done, as we slammed the door on that one, we did also want to ask you one other big thing. The decision by Žalgiris to pull out of the VTB, kind of cited financial reasons, also the fact that they will be playing at least in the second phase of the Euro Cup, should they get knocked out of the should they not reach the top 16 of the EuroLeague, cited financial reasons. Maybe talk about what your thoughts are about this entire situation, and maybe what it means for Žalgiris, but also maybe bigger picture, what it means for the VTB to lose such a big name. Of course, they say, you know, it's, you know, both sides, the VTB and Žalgiris, say, you know, it's 1 year. Maybe, you know, we can always maybe come back next year. But just in general, your thoughts on this, on their decision.
My personal opinion is that it was a good move, and I don't think getting involved with the VTB was a good decision in the first place, although it does bring some quality opposition, some quality games to fill the roster, to fill the arena for more revenue. But I didn't like the concept of the VTB league in the first place, because nobody cares about it, neither in Russia nor here in Lithuania or elsewhere around in the league. Even the league has said that they're going to cut prize money in half if the attendance doesn't go up. So I think Žalgiris' withdrawal was a good move. I'm not sure if it was all that logical, tracking back to their steps before, because they were one of the first teams to enter the VTB league, one of two biggest teams, I guess, with the CSK. I think it takes a lot from the competition, because although people don't want to admit it, it was very much a championship of former USSR states, and CSK and Žalgiris were the two rival teams. I think even the VTB league is called VTB United League, which is, I mean, just saying about the whole Soviet type league, which I don't think is a very nice concept. But
when they first started the league, you know, 5-6 years ago or whatever, they were touting this as one of the pluses, is that here we're going to bring back, you know, in one tournament, you know, in one competition, all those, you know, headline teams from the Soviet days. And one of the things that they were pushing about Žalgiris was that, oh, wow, you know, now they get to play CSKA Moscow every year a couple of times, you know, revive that great rivalry. But I was wondering about this, you know, back home in Lithuania, maybe in Estonia, places like this. I mean, isn't this a little bit offensive almost?
Yeah, I mean, look, as you say, like, you said it in a positive light. I think in Lithuania it was perceived totally negatively, that post-Soviet rivalry between Žalgiris and CSK. I mean, I think it's nice that it had an end in a way, you know what I mean, with the independence in the early 90s. But it's everything Soviet is viewed negatively in Lithuania. It's just like it's bad memories from the past. It's not even to do with the actual rivalry between Žalgiris and CSK. It's just all the things surrounding people getting deported to Siberia and stuff like that. It's just not nice associations that come with it. With those times.
Well,
although, like,
I go ahead.
I mean, it was nice to see Žalgiris and CSK play once in a while with all the legends playing their games as well. Sabonis against the CSK guys. But I think we kind of had our fun. It's enough. Yeah.
So do you see that this is sort of the start of the death of the league? I mean, they do have the TV, you know, the people are able to see the games with, especially now with this live basketball TV, you know, even more and more of the games. But do you see sort of this is the start of the death?
Well, it's tough to say because the Russians, they're always going to have some money, and where money is, you'll always have some teams willing to play. But I think even the fact that they're cutting prize money in half for the teams that don't fix their attendance is quite a telling thing. So either things get better or they don't. So if they don't, I think, yeah, considering the general interest in the league from the fans, I think there's always a chance that it's gonna keep running. But without Žalgiris, I think it might have been one of the first steps to the fall of the league. And especially because what makes it harder for Žalgiris' withdrawal is that the CEO of the VTB League, Andrei Shirokov, announced that they're not going to get prize money for the first 3 years they come back. They generally made it into a rule that teams that leave the league for non-sporting reasons, they won't get prize money for the first 3 years they return.
So they're locked out of money for the next 3 years if they do come back.
Yeah.
Oh.
Ouch. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm not sure that's a good move, to be honest, because it'll be
No.
tougher to get Žalgiris back.
Yeah, they're being total sore losers about
Yeah.
this.
Yeah, especially with all those statements as well. We don't need Žalgiris. Žalgiris is afraid of playing in the VTB league because they're going to lose to CSK by 50 points. That's just silly, silly rhetorics.
I'm wondering if, because here's Žalgiris saying, I mean, they said publicly, we're not playing in this league because of expenses. We want to compete in EuroLeague, EuroCup. We don't want to compete. We don't want to spread ourselves too thin or whatever. But here I'm looking at the VTB league roster for the next season, and here's Rytas, of course, but here's also Neptūnas. Now, how is a team like Neptūnas affording this and Žalgiris not? Or again, is that just they don't want to say we think the VTB league is a bad thing?
I think Neptūnas sees the VTB League as a chance to actually get some good teams, some good opposition to come to fill the new arena, which is obviously a big concern. It was built for Eurobasket. I'm actually here right now talking to you from Clay for the arena. So I mean, it's a 5,000 seater arena, and you gotta fill it somehow. Last year they didn't play in EuroCup. Next year they are, because they finished third in the Lithuanian League, which automatically grants them a spot in the Euro Cup. So they're gonna play both in Euro Cup and VTB. But coming back to Žalgiris, I think it was an actual concern about money, because the last couple of years when Žalgiris competed in VTB, they did have a really deep roster with 14, 15 players that can actually suit up on any given night, and that not look out of place on the court. So I think they didn't want to go in just for the sake of going in. And I think in a way, the Shirokov statement about losing to CSK by 50, it doesn't make sense, but in a way that's kind of the way it is. You either go with your young guys and just face the fact that you're probably going to lose against other teams, because you cannot afford to sit the best players in your league. So you kind of have to mix and match. And especially the Lithuanian league has been, last year they only played one round. This year they're going to play two rounds. So,
Yes.
and they're also going to play home games as well, whereas opposed to last year they didn't play home games. So, you know, it makes a difference that you don't really have to have a roster that deep if you're only playing in the Lithuanian League and EuroLeague, and maybe EuroCup if you get knocked out, which to happen, I guess.
Yeah. And so this is actually then also almost, if you will, strengthening of the Lithuanian league.
Yeah, I think that's the way it's been made out in Lithuania, that it's either VTB league or the Lithuanian league. Like, the bigger teams kind of were leaning towards VTB league the last couple of years. I think it's a good move that, yeah, it's a good move that they're actually going to play some teams, some games this year, because the past season, Žalgiris and Rytas played only away games. Basically, one team, one game per team, and it's just some weird competition system with the percentage of wins and not the points from, from the regular tournament play.
And is there any talk of Rytas following suit?
No, not as far as I have heard it, because they were in the draw, which took place a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, actually, Rytas were the ones in the first place saying, oh, this is a bad idea. This is the Soviet League. And just getting all the negative connotations with it. Whereas opposed, they're staying now and Žalgiris has pulled out.
Okay.
And that's the thing I don't really understand, because Rytas will have a lot of games next year. And I don't think it makes all that sense to just staying for the sake of it.
All right. Maybe just let us know again out there, maybe where people can catch you and follow you and what you do.
Well, basically, if you want to follow me, just head on Twitter and search for Lithuania Basket. Probably one of the best places to check out Lithuania hoops online. Just a lot of news. Generally, that's my place to be right now.
Simas Baranauskas. How was that?
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Simas, thank you much, very, very much for coming on board. Appreciate it. And good luck there in Klaipeda. And enjoy the tournament.
Thanks. I'll try to. It's the first women's tournament I'm in, so I don't want to say that, but I'm not really expecting much.
They can play some basketball too. I think you have. Doesn't the American team have Brianna Stewart there?
Yeah, she's there, but she's in the other group, so I won't get to see her until the final round.
but you will see her. They'll advance. So and I want to say she's going for her fifth gold in a row, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, she's. I've translated some pieces on her. She looks like the real deal.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll see some. You'll see some pretty pretty good basketball. You said that.
Yeah.
At least they're 19.
Yeah.
All right, Simas. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it, and good luck over there in Klaipeda.
Thanks for having me again.
Man, dreadful picture, huh? Talking about the downfall of the VTB. I know you're when he said that nobody cares about the VTB. I was like, Oz cares. That's what I was thinking.
It would. I mean,
I like the fact that it's strengthening the Lithuanian league, though, because that's one of the things, like the Serbian league, the Croatian league, all these leagues with these sort of regional leagues, like the Balkan League, there's the VTB, there's the Adriatic League. It takes away these big teams from their domestic league. And so, the fact that they're playing in that league now more, I think is a good move.
Well,
it hurts. It hurts the VTB, but on the other hand, it is good for the domestic league.
Yeah, I think that okay. On one hand, to me, the VTB league is a good thing. I mean, I've enjoyed watching the competition these past few years. Things got a little bit ugly in the finals this year. Just this grinded out sort of New York Knicks kind of series. But it's good in one respect. I mean, it's creating that European club feeling for teams like, you know, Kalev out of Estonia, Astana out of Kazakhstan. You know, on paper, this looks good. You've got 20 teams from 9 different countries. Okay. I think that the real problem here is that there's still this utter lack of competitive balance. The championship has never been played with almost never do you get a Russian team in the championship. I think once, maybe a Ukrainian team was in the finals, but perhaps every single year it's been two Russian teams. And, you know, again, the message kind of is, for a lot of these teams, you know, come to this league and get pummeled by the Russian champions. Now, I can see where that wouldn't sit well in, you know, a proud and great basketball culture such as Lithuania. Perhaps, you know, with Žalgiris leaving, perhaps again, you know, like I said last time, this might have happened on personal diplomatic levels, this breakoff. I mean, especially taking into account this thing that Seamus said, where, you know, now all of a sudden they're being hit with a penalty, you know, and not being awarded prize money. And so now what? They're supposed to play again for pride only in a league that's designed, you know, to award the Russian teams. I don't know if this is the death of the league, but wow, this is, you know, Žalgiris's exit is a huge step backward for a league that was really, you know, starting to come together in terms of organization, in terms of, you know, connections with the EuroLeague and with the Russian Super League, and you know, even mundane things like their video production and the website have really steadily improved over these past seasons, in much the same way EuroLeague has. But, you know, of course, VTB League is starting from scratch. And so in that respect, it's even more admirable. We'll see if this league is even worth watching next season. They had their draw last week, and there's still a lot of Russian clubs in this thing. So we'll see if it's still as competitive next year as it has been recent years.
Yeah, I hope it stays at a pretty high level, and everybody's, you know, continued to really be, you know, after it, and, you know, but it's competitive matches, you know, it's competitive games that they want to play and win at. And there is still a title at stake, which is a pretty high reputable, title, you know. Going back to Lithuania, the national team, you know, I really see this point guard as being a problem for them.
Yeah, you went easy on Seamus, Dave. I thought you were really gonna.
No, because. I've only seen him once in national team competition and seen the games here and there, and I just never been totally excited with Kalnietis, and you know, I didn't end up watching much off Kuban last year. Sorry, it was last year, right? Kuban, yeah, with Kalnietis.
Yes.
And so, you know, I don't, you know, maybe he did improve his game a little bit, but I just didn't, you know, I don't like the way he kind of runs a team in general, or had in the past. So, I mean, for Lithuanian sake, I hope that he can do it. But I really foresee a problem. I mean, you look at, you know, these national team competitions are also so point guard dominated. If you don't have a strong point guard, you know, you're gonna have a problem. Which, that being said, it was one reason why I still think Spain, even without their two big guys, still could be okay, because you still have Calderon, you still have Rubio, you still have Sergio Rodriguez, and you still have Sergio Llull. So, you know, those are four guys that can play the point guard. You know, they can also go off guard as well. I just don't see that. I don't see the top level guard, specifically playmaking abilities at the Lithuanian point guard. So, you know, unless one of their kids come up, you know, that, you know, he was saying, Asda, if he comes up and is able to do it, you know, that'll be a help. But I don't, you know, just I'm kind of doubtful. That's the worry, you know.
So you've got 24 teams in the pool,
I mean, the thing is, they're lucky that they, I'm going to say they're lucky that they get that group A. They're in group B,
yes.
And that's a tough group B. You know, you have Serbia, you have Montenegro, who we've both said, I mean, Montenegro is a beast. Serbia, we know. You know, Macedonia, I don't think Macedonia is going to be half as good as what they've been the last 2 years. Bosnia are going to be, I think they're going to go for it this time, big time, because they have that loss to Finland in the back of their mind and know that cost them a spot in the quarterfinals, possible Olympics. And Latvia, I just don't think are there. So you have a big four there that are going to be competing for three spots. And then they join France plus two of Germany, GB, Ukraine, Israel, and I want to say Finland. Can't remember exactly what the other team is. It's not Finland. Belgium.
Yep.
You know, two of those five with France, and they can beat the other two. You know, France is obviously going to be one of the title contenders for sure. But you know, and then if they get through that top four, you're in quarterfinals. All you got to do is one game, and you're in the World Cup. So.
I think that Lithuania is well positioned in this group. A lot of these teams have the same problems that Lithuania has. Now, if we're going to say Lithuania has a problem in general, that's okay. You're talking about the backcourt in general. You're also talking about speed. Okay, this is not any team that's going to run you up and down the floor like Spain. Okay, it's just not. Now, the only we assume. We don't know what FYR Macedonia is bringing, okay? But we assume that, okay, so your only named point guard now in this group is Milos. Am I correct? I mean, I don't know who Bosnia and Herzegovina is bringing, but I don't think they have a stud out there.
And Montenegro, we've said I'm just going to line up 12 bigs.
Well, we like Montenegro just in terms of like all the talent on that roster. But this is not a team that's going to dazzle you with speed or you know backcourt. You know, it's just not. Now, okay, and on the other hand, you've also got you know FIBA kind of stoking the regional competition a little bit. You've got Macedonia, Montenegro, Serbia, and Bosnia. All in this group. I mean, you know, those
and
are
then you have the two Balkan, the two Baltic teams.
Well, okay, but I'm not taking Latvia very seriously in this group. You've got these four teams. Now, these four teams are going to be at each other.
Our Latvian listeners are saying, "Hey, what's wrong with us?"
Sorry, guys. Sorry. I mean, this is
what
yeah,
did
like
we, we ever do?
Like we've been saying. No offense, but like we've been saying, you know, this is a big group. This is a tough group. So somebody's got to finish sixth. And right now I'm penciling in Latvia. And so, you know, Lithuania is well placed in this group. They could easily, you know, just stay the course, stick it out, you know, lean on their twin towers, lean on their NBA guys and get through. They've certainly got enough experience. This is not necessarily a team in massive transition. So you know, in this, again, you know, Lithuania in these tournaments always turns out to be more than the sum of the parts. And all they have to do is just, you know, we're going to go Doug Collins here. All they need to do is play that fundamental basketball, the fundamentals, you know, and I believe they can get through this. And I believe that in the second round, they can get through as well. These are not tough groups for Lithuania, just solid team, backcourt weakness aside, to handle.
So that's Lithuania. Looking forward to it. I think we're going to do more and more with Eurobasket in the coming weeks. I guess we're really only, 6 weeks away? So.
Wow. That's kind of depressing considering it's in September and not mid-summer.
Summer ain't going to be over in September, man. Anyhow, don't let Oz's weather predictions get you down. Let's move on to some music, and let's move into our movie of the week section. So, enjoy some great drinking tunes. You've always been the critic's darling, and it hit hell.
This is Larry Gordon from Phoenix Hog, and you're listening to Dave and Oz and Taking the Charge podcast.
The bar is open on Taking the Charge today with our Sounds of the Teens portion of the show. You just heard Chardonnay by the classic 1990s rock band Mudhoney, recorded live on WFMU's The Brian Turner Show in April 2013. Closing out the show will be Cocktails by Robbie Foulkes from the Bloodshot Records release 13 Hillbilly Giants, which is exactly what it sounds like, by the way. All these tunes and oodles more can be found on freemusicarchive.org. And now, back to Movies and Basketball on Taking the Charge.
Thank you, Wolfman Oz.
Yeah, Wolfman Oz has had a few drinks already.
I guess we're going to have to do the section, even though, anyhow.
Looking forward to this one, Dave.
Double Team, 1997, action film, American action film. Classic, not quite, but sure, why not? with Jean-Claude Van Damme, Dennis Rodman.
Dennis.
And Mickey Rourke. Double Team, Oz, take it away.
Oh, I will. Double Team is a 1997 movie starring Jean-Claude Van Damme, of course, and directed by Tsui Hark, who is a great director from Asia, of course. Of course, we know that Van Damme is also noted for bringing over to Hollywood John Woo, the other great Taiwanese filmmaker that we, from the 1990s in Hollywood. The theme of this show today seems to be keeping things short. So let's say that this movie is a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, which co-stars Dennis Rodman and ultimately leads to a climactic scene with the wrestler himself, Mickey Rourke, in the Roman Colosseum. Dave is probably going to hem and haw a little bit about this movie, about how it's not very good. But having just presented it to you in the fashion I just did, how can you resist? I'll also throw in this. Dennis Rodman, the co-star of this film, turned in one of the great performances at the Razzies, which is the Golden Raspberry Awards. Taking home the trophies. I don't know if he actually appeared on the show. He probably did. Most good sports do on the Golden Raspberries. Taking home the trophies for Worst Supporting Actor, Worst New Star, and in fact, he parlayed this film career into absolutely nothing, barring the upcoming HBO North Korea thing, which is supposed to be coming out in the next couple of months, I believe. And also a trophy for being half of the worst screen couple, himself and Van Damme. I should say that they are not literally a couple. However, Dennis Rodman's character in this movie is usually described as a pansexual arms dealer. So make of that what you will. Double Team, I say you see it. I say that this is a great, cheesy Van Damme film, well worth the less than an hour and a half it gets pulled off of.
You got 93 minutes to kill and and have absolutely nothing to do. I'd say debate whether or not you watch Grass Grow or watch this one.
Watch Grass Grow or watch a single film with Dom. Tennis ball head.
I think the fact that Rodman won those awards, I think, is pretty much all you need to. Yeah, this. I mean, we've watched some pretty bad films, and I think this is actually probably one of the ones I enjoyed the least. I'll admit it, but I did.
This was really
the tiger at the end. you know, with, you know, with the crosses and the mines, you know, the with the baby and
You didn't like the ripoff of The Prisoner? Have you ever seen The Prisoner? The Prisoner was a sort of science fiction-y kind of spy thing in the late 60s.
Was that the one that the Harrison Ford movie was the spinoff?
No, this was The Fugitive.
The Fugitive,
The Prisoner starred Patrick McGeehan, and it was basically, you know, just a one-season show was planned, so almost like a mini-series, about being on this mysterious island and about how these top secret agents, usually from, you know, of course,
that was the only thing that I thought was halfway decent, because I do like sort of, you know, secret agent type movies.
Prisoner fans will love it as well. They're fans of
that kind of helped it for me. But yeah.
Oh, come on. You didn't like how the basketball references were pigeonholed in there?
No, no.
You didn't like offense gets all the glory?
Yeah.
Got the defense wins championship?
I mean, this is really, really bad one-liners that...
You didn't like the basketball parachute?
I didn't even realize that, but yeah, I guess so.
Okay. I'm going to.
Oz is really, really, as you can tell, Oz is really, really trying to sell this movie.
I'm gonna do the true confession here. Okay, really, my ulterior motive, aside from the fact that I've been threatening you with this movie for almost the year that we've been doing the show now, my ulterior motive for this movie was I recently saw this film called JCVD.
Yeah.
And this film, wow. I mean, to say that I was impressed with a Van Damme film is going a long way. And not just impressed because, you know, the fight scenes are cool or whatever. I mean, wow. Just see JCVD. Okay, you don't have to see Double Team. Unless you're a Dennis Rodman fan, then you have to see it. Of course, you've already seen it if you're a Dennis Rodman fan. I believe he took this down to North Korea and, you know, had a screening with the Globetrotters and the esteemed holy leader or whatever they call him in North Korea. Now, that's a joke. But he should have. He should have. In any case, JCVD is this very interesting film, mostly in French, starring our man, JCVD, Jean-Claude Van Damme, which really, I mean, anything I say about this movie is going to sound unbelievable, but really analyzes what being an action hero in the movies is all about. And it really is, you know, kind of introspective into Van Damme himself. And it really puts forth things in a serious way and is an interesting, twisty-turny movie. This movie, Double Team, is a twisty-turny movie, but most of these twists and turns don't make much sense. I mean, you get the thing where we're told that after retiring, the Van Damme character must come back to come out of retirement because his old nemesis is back. But we never really understand what his old nemesis is doing. You know, there's something about him trying to steal plutonium in Croatia, but not much there. Now, JCVD is a if anything, a serious look at Van Damme, and he actually has to act in this movie. That's the movie that I can truly recommend. There's not much sports connection, unless you want to think of Van Damme forever as the guy in Bloodsport, which I don't blame you for. But that's really a movie to see. Double Team, in my opinion, I'm not backing down. Double Team, in my opinion, is a fun film. Rodman is hilariously bad, in a good way. But JCVD is Van Damme's best film. There's it's not even close. I mean, this is his only real film. So absolutely, that's a one to see. Yeah. Double Team, I'll leave up to you.
Okay. Yet you made me watch it.
That's the price you pay for doing this show.
Yes, yes.
I always used to use the line when I was a film critic after a particularly bad movie. And the line was, I see these films so you don't have to.
Yeah. Well, you see, I have
to. And that's sort of the attitude you should take with Double Team, Dave.
Yeah, yeah. Except that I had to watch it too.
Right. So that our listeners don't necessarily have to.
Yeah, exactly. In case they were wondering, should I watch that one or not? You know?
Again, just one more time. I argue that any movie with, you know, Van Damme versus Mickey Rourke in the Roman Coliseum is worth seeing.
Yeah. Okay. Sure.
What was that? You muttered something.
Sorry. Okay. So, Double Team, 1997, American action film, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Dennis Rodman, Mickey Rourke. Yeah, I'm going to say I'm not a big fan of it. There was a couple of things here and there that were somewhat entertaining, for me. I'm not the biggest fan of it, but, you know, if you like, action films, I mean, was the action that great though? I mean, if you're an action film fan,
starts off well.
Yeah. Okay. It starts off well, but there wasn't much after it. I mean,
and,
they get chased by tigers.
Yes.
At the end.
Yes, you get the climactic bit at the end. Dennis gets to do a little bit of hand-to-hand combat.
Somehow it grossed $11.4 million dollars.
On a $30 million budget.
Yep.
that's what we call running in the red.
yep. So go check it out if you feel like it. But we definitely wanted to let you know about it. So Double Team, 1997, our movie of the week. I guess that's about it for the show. For anybody out there looking for basketball, don't worry. There is plenty of basketball to watch. Even if you can't watch the summer league, which I'm sure there's some games somewhere on some online stream around. There's the U20 European Championships, which are live on live and on demand on livebasketball.tv. The U18s. I want to say the U18 European Championship men, I want to say that those are going to be on, but I think they might only be quarterfinal. I don't know. There was a press release from FIBA Europe a couple of days ago that was kind of outlining what's going on. The U19 World Championship women, the U18 European Championship men starts tomorrow, Thursday. The U18, the same day is the start of the U19 World Championship women, which is where CMS is. And that starts tomorrow as well. And that, I think, is probably at least semifinals to the end, might even be quarterfinals to the end. Definitely you can get your basketball fix even during this off season, if you will. Although it's not really off season at all. I mean, loads and loads of stuff going on. So other than that, Oz, what you got going on? Anything else?
Well, I think I'm just going to read up more about this Masha Lopatova thing. I really had never heard that before.
About the... What was that again?
Oh, about Masha Lopatova. That's Andrei Kirilenko's wife.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so I'm going to... They have a strange personal arrangement, I guess. And,
You never heard that before?
No, this is news to me, man. Apparently this first came out in, 2006? But it's big news today among some outlets.
I think
I'm going to be researching that.
Okay, have fun with that one. thanks, everybody, and we'll catch you next week.
Cocktails tore up my family. Cocktails tore down my home. One to wake me up every morning, one with a buddy at noon, one for the road every evening, till I found out pretty soon it took two to wake me up every morning, two with my buddy at noon, two for the road every evening. You'll guess what happened pretty soon. washed it down with cocktails. I had a house on a hillside. The car I was driving was new. I had money in my pocket, but look what liquor made me do. I started running around with a woman, turned my back on my wife and my kid. Wonder how mama's gonna tell him the awful thing that daddy did. Cocktails tore up my family. Swallowed my pride
and then
washed it down with cocktails.